What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Untitled Esports Show. My name is Gutex, and I'm here with Zoreen. Zoreen, how's it going?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you, Gutex?
Have you seen this man? This man?
The very elusive slasher.
Mm.
Yes, his reputation precedes him, and it is with great regret that I say that we have not seen him, or I have not seen him at all lately, and I don't know where he is, but I hope that wherever he is, he gets to watch this VOD at some point in the near future and realize how much he messed up.
In other news, yes, if you know anybody that wants to be a part of an esports podcast as a recurring co-host, feel free to send us your resumes.
Yeah, we potentially will have a spot opening up quite soon.
Yeah, I think there's a show, there's an opportunity. Anyways, there's a lot that's been happening in the wide, wide world of esports this week, and so we're going to cover all of that today, with or without Slasher, wherever you are. Hope you're happy, bro.
That's we're right. We're committing to a regular time slot, and we're going to get the show done at this time slot, whether he's here or not.
Exactly.
So 7 p.m. Pacific or 10 p.m. Eastern.
It's happening.
I guess, It's just going to, the show must go on, you know?
Esports waits for nobody. The show must go on. All right, so let's see. Today could have been a very big day in the esports timeline. Instead, because it was announced today that Apple is introducing Apple Arcade, the world's first game subscription for mobile, desktop, and the living room. Tim Apple, also known as Tim Cook, got up on stage at the Steve Jobs Theater and wowed the audience with all kinds of stuff, including what I would consider to be the biggest deal of the whole thing, which was the Apple Card, which is their entry into the credit card market. They also announced Apple News Plus, which looks like a great way to consume interactive magazines. And there was also their Apple TV Plus announcement, which was absolutely huge, which included all kinds of S-tier talents, such people that you may or may not have heard of, such as Oprah Winfrey, Steven Spielberg, Steve Carell, and Jennifer Aniston, who are making their way back to television by way of Apple TV Plus. And the somewhat I would consider the most disappointing news was the news about the Apple Arcade stuff, which I didn't find terribly interesting, and doesn't look like they were really releasing a lot of details like price point or esports title or anything like that. But I'm sure there were a lot of small children that used their parents' iPad to play games that are going to be super stoked to beg and plead to pay the money for this subscription service.
Well, Ryan, I have to say, although I am not a small child who uses my parents' iPad to play video games, I was very excited by the Apple Arcade announcement. I actually thought it was the most exciting part of the keynote for me. I could not have cared less about the TV stuff. I like instantly was just like tuning it out. And the Apple Card stuff was amazing, yes, but I was like, yeah, that's cool. It's another credit card that I won't even get. But the Apple Arcade stuff, that is what really got me excited. And I know it's not directly related to esports, but it is a big deal for gaming in general. So I think, you know, and that, of course, impacts the esports ecosphere, as I like to call it, in a very important way. And this might be where we finally start to see gaming stream services or gaming as like services start to really grab a hold of the mainstream audience. And we're, you know, starting to move away from that already with like a lot of the free-to-play model that's being adopted. I think, you know, one of the most popular examples of that is Fortnite and Apex Legends, League of Legends, Dota 2, all those games that like that have that free-to-play model, but now we're having like this gaming as like a service model that's slowly emerging, and I'm real interested to see how that does.
Right, yeah. So in the keynote presentation, they talked a lot about how the success of free-to-play games is, you know, huge on the Apple, on the game section of the App Store. And they were saying that essentially a lot of the paid games aren't as successful. So the idea is that they're going to be bundling, I think the number was like 100 plus games into this Apple Arcade service at the start. So that essentially what you could do is just pay one monthly subscription to play games across all of your iOS devices. And none of this, I mean, yeah, I mean, whatever. It hasn't even come out yet. So, you know, hard to say. But I do like the concept. I mean, paying, you have to imagine it's going to, you know, there'll be different tiers probably, maybe, or, you know, somewhere between, you know, $10, $20 seems kind of reasonable, maybe, depending on how many people you're sharing your devices with. And I think that it's, I don't know, a lot of the people that they showcased in the videos, the developers, they were super excited. I mean, it just seems like they might be excited because they're getting in a big influx of cash. Probably the only like competitive game that they featured or mentioned was Clash Royale. So, but of course that's free to play, not a paid game. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I could see like an exclusive, I don't know, exclusive, some sort of exclusive fighting game on it, maybe.
That would be huge. But they have like the top talent in there. Like they have Sakaguchi, the creator of Final Fantasy. They had Will Wright, the creator of The Sims. They had like really like highly regarded game developers who are now making games for this platform. And the way that these developers were talking about it as well, like it almost sounded like Apple was giving them free rein to do whatever they want, create whatever they want, which is really exciting. And the other part about the subscription model, which I thought was interesting, was that of all the games, none of them will have ads. The subscription fee also gets you free, like all the future content for all the games, get like expansions, whatever it is, that all comes free with the subscription as well. And you can share the game across multiple devices, like you said. So that to me is super interesting. And I think is a really kind of exciting new model that they're taking on.
Yeah, I mean, it seems so obvious in retrospect, but nobody has done it yet. But maybe it's one of those things where only Apple could do it this way. You know, Apple's whole thing is just about coming in to disrupt different industries. And I could see this being a game changer, especially for the other companies that have large libraries of titles. I mean, of course, you have Steam, there's the Google Play Store. You know, you could even argue that companies like EA or Activision could be, you know, doing the same thing with their existing library of titles. I mean, the world is going to a subscription model because it works so well, and people, you know, I don't know, people are going for it because it seems so much easier to spend, you know, $5 a month, $10 a month than it is to drop $70 on this physical disc that you had to go to your local pawn shop, I mean, GameStop, and pick up. You know, you could get this all in one go. It seems as though one of the things that they were uncompromising on is that if you pay for this, you're not going to need to buy any of the DLC because all of that is included. So it seems like they're sort of trying to chip away at that model because people, for the most part, hate it. I mean, you don't hate it when the game is free to play, but you hate it when you bought, you know, whatever AAA title and then still have to pay more for DLC. People hate that.
Oh, yeah. I especially hate when they announce DLC before the game's even out. Because then it just feels like they're holding stuff back. And that's frustrating. Or that they're holding stuff back for the sake of making money or more money off of it later on, which is understandable. You know, like I know that game development can be a very expensive industry. But if you're going to, like, at that point, like if you're announcing it before the game's even out, it just seems like you're being overly greedy.
Yes. Well, Gordon Gecko would say greed is good, but not in this instance. Fuck you guys. And props to Apple for trying to change that shit because people don't like it. And it was interesting. If you guys have some time, definitely go back and watch the Apple keynote, if for no other reason than to understand how to really shape the propaganda of whatever product or service you're trying to sell, because these guys are the masters. I'm sitting there drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm yelling at the screen. Zorin was talking to me about it. I was like live blogging it, even though it was totally not live at all because it was, I didn't watch it live. But these guys could sell fire in hell. Props to you, Tim Apple, Tim Cook, whatever you want to go by.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. What else do we got? Ah, yes. So speaking of ginormous companies making moves, Kotaku reports that EA is laying off 950 people in marketing, publishing, and
350.
more. Yeah, what did I say?
You said 950. That's a lot.
I'm sorry. I got, yes, 350 people. The reason why the nine came into my mind is because I think it said that they had 9,000 employees.
Oh, okay.
Although I don't know where I read that. Maybe I'm now I can't find it in the
Oh,
article.
there is. It's in the quote. It's in the quote,
Oh
the
yeah,
second
here it is.
paragraph.
Yeah. 350 roles in our 9,000 person company. And apparently a lot of this stuff, they've been dealing with hiring and travel freezes in marketing for several months. So they had a source that said, quote, "I think some people will be relieved not to be in limbo anymore." So, yeah, I guess unfortunate turn of events for the people that did not see this coming, and it looks
Man,
like quite the blow. 350
tough year
people
for the
affected.
games industry this year, huh? I mean, like, it wasn't so long ago we were talking about the Blizzard Activision layoffs. Now we have the EA layoffs, which comes as a surprise again because of their success that they had with Apex Legends recently. You would think that that would kind of, I guess, guarantee more time or buy more time for employees, but I suppose, when it's time to do it. As someone in the chat has pointed out, EA earned 1.16 billion in revenue, so they are doing pretty well. I guess, like, I don't know. I haven't seen the full figures or like the shareholder reports or anything like that, but it's just seems like it's all doom and gloom in the games industry for the last few weeks, which is a shame.
Well, there's definitely no correlation between doing really well in your quarterly reports, selling a gazillion dollars, getting a ton of people playing your game, and then still having a job at the end of the day. So, gaming, especially at these ginormous companies, it's rough. They're making their own rules, and I think this is, I mean, is this an indicator possibly of, the games industry finally sort of taking a downturn as a whole? I mean, it's been nothing but growth and growth and growth for as long as we can remember, but
I don't think so, actually. Like, layoffs have sadly actually always been a part of the games industry, and I know because I've worked in it for a long time, and I've seen like the cycle that developers and publishers go through. Like, they have this cycle where they build up for a big title, and then once the title's like released, or like they've released it or like launched a good title, they'll kind of like, sorry, I launched a complete title, they'll lay off staff and kind of downsize again. And it's like this cycle of like growth and then downsize and growth and then downsize. So it's not really surprising that this is happening kind of, and it has happened before. And I don't think it signifies that the games industry is on a downturn. If anything, the games industry is doing better than it ever has, to be honest. That's just what I think. But hey, what do I know? I'm just one cog in the wheel.
aren't we all? Yeah, well, unfortunate for these people that were affected, but maybe this will lead to a lot of better things for people that now are free to work on different stuff. I hear Apple starting up and their Apple Arcade thing.
Yes, but will it be esports, Gutex? That's the big question.
Will what be esports? The Apple
Apple
Arcade thing?
Arcade. You know, if there's anyone who I'd love to see like do esports, it would be Apple. Can you imagine the kind of spin they give on competitive gaming? That would be actually insane.
I would love to see Tim Apple up there talking about Apple esports. I'm sure they would call it something different or something, but I'd love to see that, to see how a master of presentation, sales, and marketing would present the opportunity in esports. I think it's inevitable. Who knows what the timeline is, but a lot of people, myself included, I would say would talk about mobile esports as, this is something that will never happen. And, I used to share that viewpoint, but then I started to look at, I reframed the way that I thought about mobile esports, and now I think of it as iOS or Android esports, because ultimately what's happening is that the devices, especially tablets, are getting bigger. I mean, you look at the iPad Pro, and then you look at the touch screens on, laptops. So I think that, excuse me, as time goes on, the devices are going to get bigger, better, faster, enough time will have passed that it'll be easier to do competitive gaming on a touchscreen, especially if you have a bigger one. So I think that all the people playing Clash Royale, all these other games, should probably keep going, because I don't
I
think it's going to
mean,
slow down.
but there was already a league for those games. Like you have the Clash Royale League. Are you okay, Ryan? Don't like, don't kill yourself over there. But you have the Clash Royale League. You have the Vainglory League, which has like a lot of pro teams in it, like TSM, Cloud9, Team Liquid have all fielded teams in those games. And then you have the PUBG Mobile League. So there are already like
No,
full-fledged
for sure.
leagues that exist for these mobile games.
Right, but how much of your time is dedicated to mobile and/or those games?
Me
You
personally?
personally, esports veteran Zorin, that has traveled the world and covered it and experienced it in all of its forms. How much time does Zorin spend on mobile esports?
Right. Confession time. All right. This is a
It's
big
a safe
confession.
space. Rod's not here.
He's gonna see this later. I'd love to see his reaction to this. But I actually play a lot of Clash Royale. Like, I play it every day. Like when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is check Clash. That is what I do. And then before I go to bed, the last thing I do before I go to sleep is open up Clash, play a couple of games, get my like chests and all that stuff. Oh my God, it is unbelievable how this game has wormed itself into like my regular life schedule ever since I picked it up.
Wow.
It's
That was not at all what I thought you were going to say at all. But that's okay. That's okay.
and I have like 3,000 trophies. Like my rank is 3,000 trophies, which basically means I'm 1,000 away from going pro. Like I can enter the like ladder or whatever it is they have, like because you need 4,000 trophies or more to enter like the
Okay.
competitive ladder.
Okay,
I
so as
have
a
no
player,
shame about this.
you are quite invested.
I wouldn't say like I'm overly invested. Like I know what I'm doing. Like I'm not to the point of like, oh my God, I have to play Clash every day. And if I miss like a day or two, I'm not like, oh my God, like I'm losing progress or whatever. So like I don't really
I didn't say that you were. I didn't even suggest any of that.
I thought that's what you were getting at, Grutex. So
No, I
anyway,
was, I was,
you know what? You know what's funny though? I actually started playing the game as research. Like, I started playing the game because I wanted to find out more about Clash Royale because they were coming to LA. They built like a studio space here, and I was like, all right, I need to find out more about this league, and I'm sure it's a very, very popular mobile game, which it is. Like, I checked it out, checked the community out, and I was like, all right, as a someone who works in esports, I should educate myself on this game that I do not understand in a genre. The whole genre that I do not ever partake in, mobile gaming, competitive mobile gaming. And the next thing you know, I'm 3,000 trophies into Clash Royale.
Wow. Okay. So we have been warned about the potential dangers of researching mobile games. Got it.
Yes.
But what I was asking was more as a professional in the esports ecosphere, as you call it, how much time do you spend, thinking about mobile and how that fits in and dealing with sponsors that are trying to attack the mobile esports space?
Right. I mean, if we were to have like a sphere representing all the time that I
Like a
think about
pie.
esports in general, right? A pie. Okay, a pie is a better analogy. I'd say it's like a tiny, like not even like, maybe it's like 5% or something,
Right,
right? When
exactly.
like games like
Yes.
Clash come along or like something's announced for like the PUBG Mobile League, I'm like, oh, that's a thing. I totally forgot about that. But I'm sure there are people out there who are avidly following these games and genres.
Yes, absolutely, they're following them. I just don't think that it's there right now. But by the time that it does get there, like I'm saying, it's not going to be mobile esports. It's going to be like tablet esports. I mean, they're not going to call it that, but the genre, the class, think of it this way. The Clash Royale players of the world later on down the line could easily experience the same sort of benefits that people who played Halo or Quake or other FPSs, were back then were able to take that experience, let's say, into games like Counter-Strike or Fortnite or Apex or whatever, because a lot of the same concepts are the same, like the aiming,
Rather than
the map
aiming and
control,
reflexes.
right? But this, when it comes to mobile esports right now, I think that as companies like Google come in with Stadia and Apple comes in with Apple Arcade, those games that are already popular now, the multiplayer Clash Royale style games, are only going to get more popular, and then there's going to be more on the line, so that eventually there's going to be the Google Stadia, whatever, streamed live on YouTube, brought to you by whoever the fuck, and then the app brought to you by Samsung or the Pixel phone, and then Apple will have all of their Apple exclusive games in their own little wonky esports ecosystem.
Have you ever been to one of those events where a mobile game was played on stage?
No, I've heard of them. They have them at they have them in Hollywood sometimes, or they were doing it for a while. I know that some of the Clash Royale or Vainglory stuff was there. I mean, it seemed
Yes,
like it would
so
be cool, I guess.
I have to say, I've seen Vainglory played on the stage, and it's such a weird feeling because you have like all these pro players on stage, and they're essentially on tablets, and it's such a weird thing to see. I know it's not that
Yeah.
far removed from a player sitting down on a PC or sitting down with his controller or arcade stick in front of a monitor and getting ready to play, but it's just so weird to see. I don't know, just to me, it's a visually like disjointing, like it's just like a really weird thing for me to see someone up there with like a tablet in front of them and like touching it as if they're browsing the web or something, you know? Like that's just kind of what it looks like when they're on
Yeah.
the stage, and that to me is like so strange.
Yeah, it is quite strange to see. But when you think about it, the keyboard and the mouse were not designed for gaming. I mean, it was barely even a thing, back. I mean, you wouldn't design the keyboard and mouse for gaming. So I think it's the natural progression for controls to change over time, especially with the tablet form factor. What I'm interested to see is when maybe there's so you think about the success of Fortnite, right? So I went to the Kitty Plays TSM Myth event at the esports arena in Vegas this past weekend. And all I could think about was like, wow, it's cool that, all these people can come play Fortnite, here on the PCs and the consoles and stuff. But then when you said that about going to a mobile esports thing and then seeing the other players on tablets, then to me, it's only a matter of time before there, starts to be some sort of mobile targeted game that could be played with, 100 or more people on their, but it's meant to be played on their, on their tablet or on their phone. That is the future of mobile. It's not even going to be mobile esports at that point. It's just going to be esports. That is the future right there. That people just
Isn't
bring their device with them. Because then,
Oh.
because if you could do it that way, now you could bring that sort of experience that only like a really big, like a not, venue like esports arena or like a big LAN center that has all these PCs. Right now, those experiences are limited to those types of venues. But if there was a mobile game that could bring in 100 or more players, kind of like you remember when people would when Pokemon Go first came out and people would just go everywhere for that?
I mean, it's some people still do. They have
No,
like
I
raids
know.
and stuff that they organize.
Right, I'm saying something like that, but a competitive thing that could basically exist anywhere. So as to not be limited by, needing those venues. Anyways, just thoughts on mobile.
And I'm sure it's kind of already like happening right now, and yet to hit the big numbers or the mainstream. But Pokemon Go is a good example for that's more like a location-based thing, which gives incentive to people to
To leave
travel
the house,
out.
yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I think the other games not so much. Like you can still just sit at home on your couch and have this excellent match on Bangalore or whatever. So yeah, it's like a thing.
Definitely. Okay. It's not going anywhere. It's a thing already, and it's only gonna get bigger. Okay, let's see. Moving on. Big developments in the venue department of Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Fusion are starting to construct their very own the Philadelphia's Fusion Arena, which is going to be open in 2021 as part of the Overwatch League. Quite the vision that they have there. You can see, I mean, it looks like they have 3,500
Wow,
seats.
3,500, that capacity? Oh my God, are they going to fill that every weekend? How big is the Philadelphia Overwatch scene?
Well, I don't. I would be impressed if they were able to fill that all the time. I think they're trying to build it with the intention of growing. I mean, 3,500 people, that is a large venue.
It is very large.
But, if you keep reading all of these studies that tell you how big esports is going to be in 5 years, 3,500 people is going to seem small.
Mean, the Blizzard Arena has a capacity of, I think, 400 to 500 people.
The
We're talking
stu
about
wait, the
something.
studio in Burbank?
Yeah, that's where the Overwatch League takes place every weekend, and pretty much all the teams are there throughout the weekend. And I think they sell out during hot weeks, like opening match, finals, semifinals, or whatever, like leading up to the finals and the stages. But in between, I'm not really sure if they sell out completely, and that's only like 400 to 500 capacity. So the fact that they kind of looked at that and went, "Oh my God, we can build a 3,500 capacity arena in Philadelphia for this one team." Well, I say one team, but really it'll be like teams coming to compete every week and all this other stuff, right? Because as we know, Watch League confirmed that they're moving to home and away games in 2020. So next year, teams will be playing like in their kind of have incentive to have their own arenas, their own spaces where they will host like home and away teams, kind of similar to baseball. So, but 3,500 is huge, a very huge, very ambitious arena size to go for. So I'm very impressed.
Well, they're planning for growth. I mean, hey, if you've already dropped $25 million, I mean, with a few more, you're already overcommitted, let's say.
They are owned by, if I remember correctly, Comcast SpectraCorp, who owns
Yes.
the Philadelphia Fusion, like, franchise in the Overwatch League.
Right.
So,
This is okay, so it says that it's going to be next to the Xfinity Live 60. So it sounds like there's all kinds of this is where a lot of the games are already taking place. I mean, oh, and then like, oh man, they're all look at it. This was like some ABC esports thing that they're
oh, they got the
covering.
controllers on.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
They did the whole thing. Oh, press start. Love it. Love the game area. Oh, look, it's an arcade cabinet.
How retro.
Holy moly, they actually put out all the retro games. My goodness. Oh, this is just an embed, like, related content type thing. So,
Well, they're trying to establish to the people that would I don't know a nice way to say older people. People that are like, what is this garbage? But yeah, it looks like there's a lot of money behind it. Yeah, okay, the co the co
Yeah, 50 million, you could say.
Hmm. Well,
Comcast.
it'll be interesting to see how many free tickets they have to give away in order to get people to come. But I mean, that's got to be the model right now. It's more important to get asses in seats than it is to get, $20 from people at the door,
That's true.
in my opinion.
Still, and they said when will the arena be complete?
2021.
Okay, so kind of in time, not really in time to go to their home and away model in 2020, right? But I mean, they're just the first of the Overwatch teams to announce their venues, and I imagine we will soon start to see other Overwatch League teams following suit and announcing their venues as well. Very curious to see what's going to happen in LA since we have two teams here, but and space is very limited and expensive in LA. So, very curious to see what's going to happen in the future. And I mean, if everyone's got all these 3,500 capacity arenas, what's I gonna say about it? Like, what's that saying about the popularity of Overwatch League? Like, that's so ambitious.
It's super ambitious. I mean, they have to be thinking about what these facilities are going to be doing between now and the time that they can pull in 3,500 people. And also, I don't know the specifics about whether or not these are able to be used for stuff that's not Overwatch League related, because it's going to be nice to be for the people that are building these arenas to be able to use them. In the same way that, the esports arena and other venues are sort of trying to cultivate this model of bringing in publishers and running other people's events. Somehow this doesn't look like that's going to be the case, and this stuff is all just going to be like Overwatch, maybe Overwatch and Call of Duty League, focused. But beyond that, it seems like, I don't know. Maybe there's something that we don't know. Maybe there's.
Actually, that's a good point, though. The Call of Duty tie as well potentially could be something. There could potentially be something there, like another use for the venue, because from the pictures, it seemed like it was very heavily Fusion branded, the venue. So that would tell me that it can't really be used for other games or anything else that steps away from that. I know we've talked about the whole, like, esports venues as a model for revenue and kind of like where the next big thing in esports is going. So it's just going to be, like, I don't know if they can make money by sticking to just Overwatch League or even Call of Duty as well.
But if you have this money to drop, I mean, do you need it back? I mean, what's if you got if
Great
you
business model.
yeah, I mean, if you got $25 million to spend on the franchise and then you b spend another, I don't even know how many millions on this, clearly you're not short on cash and you can probably wait years and years for the popularity to of esports as a whole to show. I mean, but what do I know? What do I know? All right.
A lot, Ryan. That's why we are the experts on the Untitled Esports.
You're right. You're right. I'm able to pretty accurately predict future trends, and I feel like it's gonna take a while. Okay. Should we talk about this study?
Yes, no, I am so itching to get to this because I know we both have a lot to say about it.
Okay.
So you can paint, tell everyone the context for this story
Okay.
that we
Okay.
both have laughed about.
Okay. Well, the context is that Zorin sent over this link from TechCrunch that says that this study that was published by a company called Recreate is saying that US Twitch streamers raked in roughly $87 million
A
in
lot of millions.
2017. Although originally, I think it said 87 billion, but they correct 87 billion, quite the increase.
Typoed the study's results.
Right. Yeah, they made a typo. They corrected it. Editor's note, earlier version of this post
My
included too many
God.
zeros. Twitch streamers made 87 billion instead of 87 million.
That is quite the difference in numbers.
Yeah, well, they corrected it. But okay, so anyways, then they linked to the study. So I, as somebody who considers myself skeptical of all sorts of reports, facts, and figures that are presented to me, I took the liberty of downloading this 900 page plus report and going through some of the details that I find interesting because the study is it's actually quite interesting, I would say, for people who are like in the creative space. Like if you're trying to make money on Twitch or YouTube or Instagram or Etsy or Amazon, you should read this report because it was interesting. Although if the accuracy of the numbers is anything like the accuracy of their Twitch numbers, maybe it's not worth looking at all. But there's some interesting points. There's some interesting stats, I guess. But I'm most interested in the way that they came up with this number. Because $87 million, as somebody who, has made a dollar or two on the literally like $2 from the Twitch platform, I can tell you that it's not just about, your advertising, but they're also, there's also this the subscriptions in there as well. So I thought it was really interesting the way that they were calculating these estimates. Are you curious at all?
I put on my news writer hat when I saw this story, went to the source, saw it was 90 plus pages, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to read this tonight. And you straight out told me that the methodology was quite interesting, which is how you put it, I think. And I was like, oh boy, this is gonna be good. What I thought was hilarious, and this is something that happens in the games industry, it happens in the tech industry, and it really pisses me off, is that after TechCrunch published this story, every other publication thought to pick it up as well and quote the exact same numbers that they did. And it's very clear to me that no one has actually gone to the source and read through the report, which is fair. Not everyone has, like, I don't know, an hour in their day at work to go through a 97-page research document. But you're not going to actually look at the source and maybe verify that the information there is somewhat credible before you write about it and publish the story. So that I really hate when publications do that and they kind of pick each other's like stories up and like, oh, they wrote this headline, we need to cover this as well. And
But
then
we
they don't even
almost did the
credit the
same
original
thing.
Then they don't even credit the original source of the news. They just credit like the source of the information and like think that that's okay. I really hate when like writers do that. Anyways, that
Lazy
aside,
writers.
lazy. Well, it's not so much lazy as just being greedy, I think. They don't want to put credit, like, or give extra credit to a competing publication, right? But this, the research that they put in this document, and Ryan, I don't know if you want to bring it up again,
Oh yeah,
but the
here,
way they
let's.
calculated that
Oh
number.
yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. Okay. All right. So
So this is how they got to the
this is
fact
how they
that
got to the number.
that Twitch streamers made
Yes.
$87 million in 2017.
Yeah, okay. This is gonna take a while, guys. Chat, feel free to weigh in with your interpretation of this methodology because we're gonna need some help here. I'm not a math major. Zorin studied in a foreign country.
Oh, are
Okay.
you putting our education system on blast now?
These are jokes. These are jokes. I don't know anything. I'm sure everything is great down there. Okay. Superdata, a market research firm focused on video game platforms, has estimated that the worldwide, quote, gaming video content and esports market, GVC for short,
Ugh,
was.
they have a capital S as well for esports.
That's how you know
Sorry.
it's legit, Zorin.
Ugh, go
Was
on.
three. Is that.
Billion, right?
Right. Like, that's $4 billion, right?
Yeah. If we're rounding up by 50
Yeah.
million, yes.
3.395 million dollars. No. No, it's four. Yeah, it's
3.9
four.
billion.
Sorry, yeah, it's 3.9. Okay, yeah, like 3.9 billion. I don't know where they got those numbers from, but these guys are basing their numbers on those numbers. And then they say the US represents about 36.3% of the worldwide GVC market, or a market worth $1.4 billion. Twitch represents 54% of the GVC market, and therefore we estimate that Twitch and the creators on its platform earned $775 million in 2017. We also had comparable data for 2014 and calculated Twitch revenues to be $585 million. Assuming that Twitch's US gaming revenue grew at a constant rate, its revenues were $711 million. Does
And
any of that
here's
seem
where it
like a
gets even
stretch?
here's where it gets even more dicey, which I love.
Okay, successful creators, Twitch creators receive their earnings through the partner program. The program does not have strict requirements to become a partner, but Twitch states that its partners should stream content at least 3 days a week, blah, blah, blah. They report that about 27,000 of its 2.2 active streamers are partners. So that's essentially a little, what, a little over 1%? That doesn't sound. Okay, and so based on that data, we estimate that Twitch had 9,700, or sorry, at 9,800 American partners, and that Twitch and its partners earned $775 million in 2011. It even notes that they actually break down the subscription platform by saying that the Twitch rev share is 50-50, and that high performing partners can earn 60, can get a 60-40 split. But it doesn't really talk at all about how they got these numbers, because this is all just sort of like
There's
some
like 50
really,
therefores.
yeah, like this is quite the stretch, because none of the subscriber earnings are public unless people make them public. And Amazon doesn't actually report on what Twitch's real earnings or total subscriber base. I mean, they don't even, as far as I know, they don't even tell people how many Amazon Prime members there are. You know? So
Yeah. I mean, there are tools out there that you can use to draw an estimate, but when I've run the tools against like numbers that I do know for certain, they actually haven't been accurate. So, I can see where they're trying to go with this methodology, and it's hard when so much of the information is private. But like, if I were to write this out as a formula, I feel like it would get real dicey what they like. What they were drawing upon the formula they were using, right?
Yeah, I mean they don't really say how they're getting that 775 million number. And also even if Twitch made $775 million, it's still unclear as to how they got to $87 million as what they were paying to the
Well, Ryan, if you, I think if you scroll down, they clearly state their very clear and obvious methodology of using the midpoint, whatever midpoint it is that they decided on, and applied that to the figures that were earned in 2017.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
there's like a lot of it's just. There's just so much assumption that is made here. And then the fact that this like data got picked up by news sites and then reported on as if it was, 100% accurate.
right, as though
It's
Twitch
just
itself ha or Twitch or Amazon had released those numbers, as if.
Yes. Right. And it's so not the case. It's totally not the case. It's completely wrong. Like, it's embarrassing.
To estimate their total earnings, we draw first from Census Bureau data on sole proprietors that shows that the top 0.68% of sole
Oh my.
proprietors generated 15.9% of all earnings by sole proprietors, and the top 2.4% generated 29.9% of earnings. Therefore, obviously, we can apply all of those data points to Twitch streamers. That's not a leap at all. Like, not even a little bit. That's not a stretch. Why would that be a stretch? Why would any of this be wildly inaccurate?
I tried to look up this agency or whatever they are, research firm or whatever. I don't even know what they recreate.
Recreate.
I can't find anything about them online, and it's not a very good like searchable term either, which doesn't make it any easier, but I'm sure if I dug a little bit deeper, I'll find something.
Yeah.
This is just
Total number, look at this. Total number of streamers on Twitch, 2 million? And the percentage of those that are partners is
1
1%?
point. Wow, really? But
That's what they're
there are.
saying.
If they're counting everyone who made a Twitch account as a streamer, then I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2 million.
Well, okay,
Like,
right.
how are they defining streamer? Are they defining people who actively. Wait, was that what the paragraph before was about? The whole like 3 days a week streaming stuff?
Let's see.
Because I feel like if they're defining a Twitch streamer as someone who has created a Twitch account, and is on Twitch, then yeah, they're all
Sure, I
streaming.
could see that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean that.
Oh wait, no, it says there 2.2 million active video game streamers.
Twitch reports that worldwide about 27,000 of
27,000
its
of its 2.2
2.2. Okay,
million.
here, let's check that. 27,000. Okay.
Ah,
Yeah.
citation.
Okay, let's see. What's number 47? We're gonna start with the sources. Oh,
Everyone,
you're
you're
saying.
getting a crash course in checking sources.
Oh, I mean, this is
Wait, the
what.
source is Twitch 2018. What kind of citation is that?
Right?
That's a t what? What does that mean?
Here, look at it. We're gonna keep going. and we're going to see if
We're going
all
down the
these
rabbit hole.
sources.
This is incredible.
Hey, well, this is what we do here because I will not stand for this fucking inaccurate, hocus pocus, best case possible scenario bullshit, dude. Like, fuck out of here. This is why people are trying to put in $25, $40 million into Overwatch leagues because the people with money read this shit and they're like, we would be losing money if we don't invest in this amazing opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about this a lot and how like so much stuff in esports gets inflated and then no one kind of cross checks each other and everyone keeps on inflating and we end up where we are and who knows where that may lead.
Exactly. I mean, this is. I'm scrolling here. Look at. I'm scrolling. I'm trying to find where the actual appendix is, but where they're citing their sources. But.
Anyway, the point is the study. I mean, they say some interesting things, and you can tell they've put a lot of effort into this, but I feel like a lot of the leaps that they've made have been a little bit
A little
questionable.
bit of a stretch.
Actually, let's be real, a lot of a stretch. But at the same time, it's really hard to find the data on this since Twitch and Amazon do not release any data publicly like that. So it's hard to really know what's happening, but hey, esports is a million-dollar industry, everyone, so let's keep on talking about the big numbers.
Stuff is hilarious. But you know what? Propaganda works. If it didn't,
Yeah.
they wouldn't be commissioning these types of studies. They're
Then we
actually.
have things like websites writing articles about them, and then other websites seeing that, hey, this big website wrote up about it, we should too, and write the exact same thing.
Well, it works. I mean, it works great. Here, look at. Here's the. At least we found about the authors. Robert J. Shapiro is part of SoneCon, a private firm that provides economic and security related analysis and advice to the senior officials of the US and foreign governments. Ah, see, this is why it has the breakdown by state about the impact of the creative economy. Because really what this report is all about is how much people are making on all of the different platforms, probably so that they can send this to different government officials so that creatives can be taxed more. Because obviously, what we need in this country is higher taxes, on digital income. Obviously, that would solve
Ryan,
everything. What?
Kutex, did you just make a leap from like this Twitch study all the way to like higher taxes? That's
When
pretty
you
incredible.
look at the way that this report, I mean, don't take my word for it here. Let me. It's just that this thing is so freaking massive that it's difficult for poor old Microsoft Edge PDF browser to load up. But look at this is why I say that because it's broken. The bulk of the report is broken down by state based on how much they estimate the each state's creatives are making on these platforms. Because it's not just Twitch that it's talking about. It's also talking about YouTube, Etsy, Amazon, Tumblr, Instagram, WordPress, all of these different platforms, of which clearly my computer is having trouble displaying this stuff. But most of the meat of the PDF is sorted by state. Here, watch, I'll show you.
Okay.
Because it's talking about the top five states and the bottom five states in terms of like what percentage like how many creators they're estimating are in each state and all this stuff.
Okay, well, that's going into a whole other thing, but anyway, the study is very lengthy. And if you're interested in checking it out yourself, it is available online. I
Oh,
think
yeah.
if you go to the story itself on TechCrunch, it's linked there, and you can download it yourself and take a look at it. Okay, that's
Yeah,
interesting.
see? So there's one of these for each state. So I suspect that this is being used to influence government officials in one way or the other. Impossible to
Jesus
say.
Christ.
Well, based on the guy's bio, were you not convinced about the bio?
I can't say that I am Gutex.
The guy works. Okay, look at so there's one of these
Yeah,
per
no, you don't have to try and convince me anymore. I mean, like, I think it's a really interesting theory.
I think we went through the I gotta look through the bio. Okay, here. Let's just read the bio. So we can understand. I mean, it's important to
No, we
consider.
don't have to read the bio. We read the bio. What are you
All right.
doing?
All right. Well, the guy works with government people doing government things.
And therefore, Twitch made $87 million in 2017.
Definitely not a stretch at all. At all. So my recommendation is for everybody with money to definitely follow all of these recommendations and do what you need to do to make the best out of, to carve out your niche within this, what do they call it? Like $4 billion industry or whatever. Yeah.
I think the number's risen by now, but
Oh yeah.
anyway.
Oh, that was 5 minutes ago.
Anyway, this just goes to show, like, anyone could publish a headline and it could get picked up by any other publication, no matter how reputable it is. But and I think something actually similar happened a couple of years ago. Do you remember, or I don't know if you heard about this, Ryan, but a couple of years ago, someone faked being an ex-Microsoft employee and was verifying and posted all these kind of like fake screenshots that some popular IPs were being rebooted at Microsoft, including Conker's Bad Fur Day or the Conker series, which is a very well-loved IP back in the day. And he went to Reddit and it got picked up by Reddit, and everyone, of course, upvoted it because they believed some dude with screenshots, apparently. But a few publications in the gaming industry published stories about this, except for Kotaku, who refused to because they couldn't verify the source and didn't trust this guy's screenshots. They could have very easily been faked, which is fair. And eventually the guy came clean and said, yes, I faked this all for an assignment to see how easy it would be to fool news writers or publications into publishing a fake story.
And it worked.
And it worked. So check your sources.
Check your sources. Noted. Well, a very reputable source, Esports Observer, is saying that Aquilini has raised $18.7 million to acquire Luminosity Gaming. Aquilini, for those not familiar, as I was not, owns the Vancouver Canucks NHL team. And it looks like this is yet another big sports ball sports organization, or I guess you can't call them. What did you call them last time? T sports, traditional sports,
Traditional sports, T
T
sports.
sports. Another T sports organization trying to jump in and cash in on esports. But it looks like the structure, the way that they had to do it, was actually quite interesting. This was like they had to get them.
Whoa.
Yeah, they had a diagram. Let's see. So they have to do a reverse takeover to acquire J55 Capital Corp, a shell company that is publicly traded at the Toronto Stock Exchange Venture Exchange. This is a process usually used to avoid high costs and stock dilution, as well as the lengthy process associated with the IPO.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't understand what's happening. Like, I don't know a lot of like what's happening here. What's a reverse takeover? Like, what? Can you break this down to layman's terms?
Sure, I can do my best based on what I understand about what they're trying to do. So Aquilini owns, okay, here. So Aquilini owns the Canucks and Rogers Arena. Rogers, of course, the big telecommunications company. And they raised the money, and now it looks like they're gonna acquire J55 Capital Corp. So, which is listed here. And so, because it's already listed, this, I guess, it provides some advantages, like not needing to deal with with the IPO process, because they're already publicly traded.
Right.
So they set up this shell company that is already publicly traded. So they went through the process with that already, I'm guessing, which is why it's already listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So because it's already listed, they can just buy them essentially, and they'll already be publicly traded.
So this J55 Capital Corp already existed like a long time ago, or are you saying they created this to do this thing?
Hard to say. Let's have a look-see.
Going down the rabbit hole.
That's what we do
Pretty
here.
hey, Aussie dollar.
Okay, so currently trading at 32 cents Canadian, but if we look at their 1 year, here, let's look at the full chart. Let's see how long it's been around. Okay, yeah, so, huh. It looks like it was formed in December, so it's a brand new thing. And if we look at the
I'm like watching you navigate this with like great curiosity because this
well,
is.
here's the thing. My e-stocking abilities are, I won't say I'm the number one esports stalker, but I'm definitely in like top 10.
Damn, top eight, maybe.
Maybe even top eight, you know, if there was some sort of final
All
bracket at the end, I think I could find a lot of data. Only
right.
using without using any sort of inside sources.
All right, everyone, be glad you came to esports school today.
Hey, I mean, that's the new the, yeah, maybe that's the new name of the show, Esports School. Where did you go to esports school, Zorin? Exactly. So essentially, the way that I'm interpreting this is that they did form it for this transaction, and it was probably easier to have this shell company listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange first, and then just go back and then rename it. Kind of, it sounds like this is kind of similar to what. To the way that Esports Arena, to the way that our game spun out Allied Esports and World Poker Tour, and then got acquired by Blackridge, because that company is already publicly traded. So it seems
Right.
like this is a similar way to do it.
And now they own Luminosity Gaming, which is a very big esports organization.
Yeah, so it looks like they okay, so then okay, so let's look at the second one, right? So J55 created a wholly owned subsidiary to perform a three-cornered amalgamation between with the Luminosity Gaming Incorporation. So process in which it become one company and can take control of the freshly merged company as its parent company.
So, Luminosity Gaming, for those who don't know, is an esports organization. They have a CSGO team that was, I mean, not like the top of the top CSGO team, but like pretty, decently there. They do some work in some competitions every now and then, tournaments. Most famously, probably, is that Ninja used to be signed to them as well. He, I believe, is now no longer part of the organization. And let me just pull up their site. Who else they have? Luminosity. But they've been around for quite a while. Like, they're an established esports organization. And, the, here you go. So they have, oh, they have a prominent Call of Duty team as well. And of course, I think the Vancouver Titans, their Overwatch League team, who got introduced to the franchise this year, is probably their most well-known team now.
Yeah, so I guess for those of us not involved in the deal, I would consider this to be this one, still one of the first opportunities for outside people to, let's say, invest directly in esports, right? Because,
You can buy shares.
because you can buy shares right now. And it's interesting too, because they're priced at 32 cents Canadian, and I wonder how they got to that price point. That's interesting.
Well, why don't you find out and then report back next week,
Well,
Gutex, and tell us what you found.
the reason why I mention it is because the company, because Black Ridge Acquisitions, the company that's merging Allied and World Poker Tour, like their deal was like a $100 million deal, and they were selling shares at $10 a pop. This looks like they probably had to raise a lot less money because, they raised 18.7 million to buy J55 Capital Corp, and they're listed at 32 cents. Like, what does that mean? I don't know. We're gonna find out. We're gonna find out on the next episode of Esports School.
I'm sure, hey, if you find some really like dicey things happening, I'm sure we will all be ears to hear it next week.
I
So.
doubt it'll be that interesting. Yeah. I don't think it'll be very juicy at all. But who knows? All right.
All right. But the next thing seems a little bit more juicy. What's this?
All right. New rumor that MIA Slasher has had sent in. It looks like there is a rumor, emphasis on rumor, that Walmart could be talking to developers and publishers about potentially doing a streaming service.
Wow, Walmart becoming the new Twitch, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing.
I mean, it kind of makes like aligns with what they've been doing lately. Walmart has been expanding their moves into the esports slash gaming space. They partnered with Esports Arena to release some PCs exclusively at Walmart, and they're also doing their competitions as well. So they're moving the Level Up series, I believe, the Wednesday Night Fights fighting game tournaments to select Walmart locations, or they're expanding them there. Sorry, not moving them there. I'm correcting myself. And I think it's just kind of this kind of like having seen how businesses and brands approach esports, if it all leads to something bigger, like the release or launch of a streaming service, it would make sense to me. Because that's how usually, they'll start with like the test and learn phase, and then, as those are, successful or not. But if they are, they kind of like gear up to move on to like a big launch instead. Like a big launch of something, whether it be a service, product, an event, series, or anything like that. So yeah, Walmart is getting heavily into gaming. And they're a big retailer. They're a big force to be reckoned with.
Well, they're probably feeling the heat from multiple different places, I mean, Amazon for sure is slowly creeping in on Walmart's lunch money. And yeah, I mean, they are putting the smaller, like, satellite esports arena locations inside different Walmart stores, which are already rolled out. But it definitely seems like a stretch to me for them to start some sort of game streaming service, especially this early in the game. It seems like if, and companies like Apple and Google are just starting to get into the mix of doing a game streaming service, Walmart seems like this is totally outside of their core competencies. But what it one of the things that I found interesting about the article was that it mentions that there's a Walmart data center called Area 71.
Oh my God. We're getting into some real conspiracy theory stuff here. Is this
This is,
legit? Is this real?
well, first,
Area 71?
look at.
You're using Wikipedia as a source?
No, I'm using this. Okay, first off, the first thing I said was that this whole thing was a rumor, right?
Okay,
I said,
that's fair. That's fair.
rumor. But maybe it's a very true rumor because the man who reported it, Slasher, is MIA. So maybe the
Ooh,
Walmart
maybe
people got him.
Walmart has him. We have to find him. Which Walmart is he being held in? Give us a clue, man. We need to find our friend Slasher. Where is he? Why did he go missing all of a sudden? He stopped replying to us.
Well, I think it has something to do with the fact that he wanted to talk about this article. Because here, on the tail end of this rumor-based article, it says, finally, Walmart has a data center unofficially called Area 71, which holds in Missouri, which holds 4 trillion bytes of data. I don't know how many
160
petabytes that
trillion?
is. That is a number larger than I can even comprehend. But that's what led me to look at, to look at this stuff.
Hey, you
So
know
yeah.
what that means, right?
What?
We're going to Missouri.
Are we?
We need to find our friend Slasher and bring him
I
back.
guess if there was one place that Slasher would be within the Walmart, where they would take him here. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah,
put him in our,
Area 71.
yeah, that's where I would put him.
Operation Rescue Slasher.
Yeah. So I don't know. We probably should have taken that one off of the, but it's fine. But
Yeah,
if it happens, you heard it here first, but I don't think it's gonna happen.
you're doubtful. I mean, if Walmart is not doing as well as you, if Walmart is dying as much as you say they are, switching to a digital service or like trying to sell digital services kind of makes sense, moving away from retail.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
hey, I don't know much about Walmart. Actually, I've only been there a handful of times in my life, so.
wait, you don't know about the wall? Okay.
We don't have Walmart in Australia,
Right. Well,
so.
I mean, essentially Walmart is like theoretically one of the big American small business to ginormous corporate conglomerate success stories, and there are Walmarts everywhere. Like in Southern California, Walmart is not that much of a thing, especially probably like in Hollywood and downtown, probably around where you live, not really a thing. But if you go to other parts of the country, like the Midwest, where they got the 24-hour Walmarts and people go to the Walmarts to like kick it, which is why it sounds strange to some of us, myself included, that you would put an esports arena within a Walmart. But when you think about the Walmarts in the Midwest and really remote parts of the country, it makes a little bit more sense because people's entertainment options outside of big cities are quite limited.
So people go to Walmart for entertainment. Got it. Okay, that's basically what I've learned tonight.
This is why this country, one of the reasons why this country is so divided. Yeah. There are people that will hang out at a Walmart and people who won't hang out at a Walmart.
Great. Amazing. I'm glad I showed up to esports school today. This has been enlightening.
Anytime, Zorvi. I got you. You're not from here. It's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes context is important. Anyway, so was that about it? Do we want to talk about?
How Slasher is missing and never responded to our messages?
Well, I mean, I think we know where to find him. I'm just not willing to make that trip.
Oh, Area 71, that's right.
Yeah.
No, I think we should start like this like Twitter thing to make him feel like he missed out on a really big thing that happened. So maybe we should, I don't know, like start like a hashtag for him to be like, I can't believe you missed out, man. You know?
Okay, what should the hashtag be?
Let's see. It's gotta be something. Let's see what the chat says. I feel like something that would make him be like, yo, what the hell happened on the show today? Like,
Know. I think a hashtag new co-host.
yeah, we're opening up auditions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that he's not. I'm assuming that once you go into Area 71, you don't come out. So I'm
So,
assuming.
yeah, in other news, we're looking for a new co-host on this show. So, if you're interested, be sure to tweet at Slasher
Yeah.
and be like, new host or something. Hashtag new host. Hashtag
Yes.
save Slasher. That's great.
All right. Well, not holding my breath on that, but yeah, we'll see what happens. Do you want to talk about skill-based gaming?
What? Like in general?
Yes.
Okay. What do you want to talk about? Or
Skill-based gaming, video game gambling.
oh, is this that betting thing where like you can bet on yourself to win a match against someone and then go ahead and do that and then make money off of it?
Yeah.
Because I think I saw like there was a website that was doing this, and I watched their intro video and I was like, this is interesting. I wonder how many people are actually doing it. Are you saying I can go on there right now, bet $5 against a stranger that I will beat them at Tekken and then make $5?
Theoretically, yes. Yes. Now,
That's
if that
assuming
were the
someone's going to be willing to take the bet.
correct, what do you think about that model?
I mean, the FGC's been doing this kind of stuff for years, longer than that.
I mean, every match in the arcade was a money match, whether it was 25 cents, 50 cents, or a dollar. It's still a money match, theoretically.
Yeah, I think the problem with going online with these sort of things is like,
No, offline.
wait, that's not how are we talking about the service though? Because the service works right online. Like you got to
Oh,
verify it.
no. Okay. Skill-based gaming is what they're calling video games put into casinos where you can bet money on yourself to beat the other person or to beat the game
Oh.
itself.
Like in a venue. And
Inside
you
a
go
cas
there and you
inside a
go there and you
casino.
play the person, and I'm assuming it's like a controlled space or something where there's security and other things.
Like a casino, yes. Controlled space in a casino, just like all the other casino games, like slot machines, poker,
I
roulette.
like the idea. I think it's an awesome idea. I don't think a lot of people are going to be game enough to do it though.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the whole psychology of losing and all that, like once you've lost once or twice, you're going to want to leave straight away. You're not going to stick around and be like, I think I can make my money back, because it's so much effort to try and stick around and play and win your money back and like win more matches to the point where it becomes profitable. I think it's different when you're talking about things like slot machines or poker or games like that, but when you have skill-based games thrown into the mix, it becomes too much. There's too much effort required. What do you think?
I think it's going to be a struggle at the beginning. And when you think about it, if something like this had existed when arcade culture was alive and well, RIP 20 years ago, you definitely would have seen a lot of people jumping on board. The challenge now is to get skilled gamers into a casino to play against other skilled gamers because you don't want the really good people to play against the people who are just trying to have a good time or the people who can beat. There have to be, I guess what it is you have to have ways to divide people based on skill.
Yeah, I mean, like in gambling, when you step up and put your money up, you do that because you think there's a chance you could win. Whereas in skill-based gaming, if you're terrible at a game, or if you're like even new to a game, you're not gonna think that
Oh,
by entering
absolutely.
the arena.
Right.
So there is like such a high barrier of entry there. You only like you would have had to have gone to the casino or like whatever you want to call the arcade or whatever. For the sole purpose of like, you have to have gone there with the intent of wanting to do that, and not randomly walk past and be like, "Oh, look, they have Street Fighter. I can play Street Fighter. I'm gonna put up like $2 that I can beat this guy here at Street Fighter. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah. It's a struggle, but I think that the way that gaming is going and the way that I think casinos in general, not just in Vegas, are going is they have to figure out something to replace slot machines, video poker, a lot of the stuff that I just don't see the modern, like young people. I don't see millennials playing a lot of slot machines and video poker.
Esports betting.
Esports betting, I do think, is going to be a thing. Now, there's an area that I would love to see some made-up facts and figures for from one of these different companies that do these types of
Get on a
surveys and studies.
recreate.
Yeah, get on it, recreate. Dot Robert, whatever that guy's name, Dr. Shapiro, or whatever that guy's name was. Get on it. Start telling everybody about how much money there is to be made in esports betting. Because it's going to happen. It's just going to take a long time. Just in the same, which is why I think skill-based gaming is so interesting here in Vegas and in other casinos, because and where it will be, because they're trying to figure it out. Like, they're trying. It may not be this model, but it's they're gonna have to figure out how to make up for the revenue, because the slot machine, slot machine revenue is down. I mean, every think about it, right? If a lot of old people are playing slot machines, slot machine players are dying out at a rate, but they're not being
Right.
replaced by new slot machine players.
Do you know that for a fact?
I don't know that for a fact. This is sort of anecdotal theory.
Right. Okay.
I don't see that style of gambling carrying over to current and younger generations.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would have to disagree. I actually feel like a bunch of young people go to Vegas and hit up the tables and gamble away, and it's like a lot of fun.
Oh no,
And
I mean like slot machines and video poker. The table games are
oh,
different.
specifically
I'm
those,
talking,
right?
yeah, right, because remember, I'm not talking about the space that poker, blackjack, craps, roulette, like the traditional table games. I think those games are fine, but the automated, unattended slot machines, video poker machines, all of those things, I think, are on the. My understanding from different conversations with casino people was like that revenue is steadily declining. And that's why you'll see them, experiment with different things like skill-based gaming.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Well, skill-based gaming, sorry. Still skill-based gaming and betting on this, I don't think it's going to. I mean, there's still stuff to figure out. I don't think it's going to take off anytime soon, to be honest. And that has a lot of barriers, but I'd love to be proven wrong.
Yeah, same. Same. Yeah. Yeah, Q-Master 2 says true, but outside of Vegas, I feel it's still a dying form of entertainment, at least among younger people. All right. Just wanted to get your quick take on all that. All right, Zorin. Hey, what's going on with your series?
Oh, so the video series you mean, in which I interview a bunch of executive level women in esports. We have wrapped up filming on 4 episodes. We are filming the fifth one soon, and then it will go into post-production and hopefully be out in a couple of weeks. So look out for it there. It will be published to Travis Gafford's YouTube channel. I'm collaborating with him on this series. It'll be 5 episodes in total, and I hope you all enjoy it because we're working very, very hard on it.
Sweet. All right. Thank you for the update. Look forward to seeing that soon. Are you going to be at NCR this weekend? No, right?
Sadly, no. I will probably be lying in bed watching NCR.
Right, well, I'll I'll be there to give the on the floor, on the show floor
Yeah, give us
recap.
some hot interviews and stuff, man. Grab all the dudes, all your
Probably not going to be
homies.
doing that, but I'll tell you how it was. All right, Zorin. In the meantime, between now and next time, where can people go for more Zorin?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter. I am at Zorin. Please don't send me on any DMs asking for nudes. I really don't like that. You can also find me on Instagram. I am Team Zorin. On Twitch, I am also Team Zorin, and same thing on YouTube. I stream to Twitch once a week, every Thursday night, so you can catch me there.
All right, noted. No nude requests. I can't even believe you feel like you had to say that.
Apparently, it needs to be said.
Guys. Thank you for watching the Untitled Esports Show. My name is Gutex. You can follow on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll be back next week with more of what's going on in the wide, wide world of the esports ecosphere. Thanks for your time, and we'll see you next time. Later, bye.
7 o'clock. Bye, everyone.